Well, happy to be here, and thank you, Mary, and everybody for being here tonight. And I will offer my Dharma talk now, and it's called Emptiness and Making a Better Story. And I want to start by telling a story. I am a storyteller, by the way, so I definitely don't think there's a problem with stories. It's just that we can sometimes limit ourselves, and we can kind of wake up through our practice and find what's authentic and what's real in our heart. And it helps to liberate us and help us to find new stories. And so I wanted to start with this story. And I was at a retreat several months ago at a place that had beautiful outdoor area. And there was a bench that I was sitting on, and it had some stone posts on both sides. And as I was looking over, I noticed that there were all these little ants, you know, and when you're on a retreat, sometimes you're a little bit more slow, a little bit more, you have time to pay attention. And so I started watching the ants, and it just became fascinating because they were all so busy with their activities. You know, they all had little twigs and little pieces of leaves and all these little things they've picked up, and they were very busily walking up the stone, and I couldn't figure out where they were going. And so I walked around looking to see what they were doing, and I never could figure it out, but I kept seeing all these ants. And then what got my attention, that there was this one ant that was carrying a twig that was very long. It must have been 8 to 10 times the size of the ant. And it was really struggling with this twig. And it was, sometimes it would try to walk up the stone with the twig, you know, and it would kind of wobble, and then it would turn around, and it would turn the twig down, and it would try to back up. But then inevitably what I would find is it would kind of lose its spot, you know, it would start to fall, and then it would try to get itself up again. So I watched this ant struggling with this twig for, you know, some period of time. It probably wasn't that long, but it seemed long to me. And then at a certain point, you know, it started going down again. It just couldn't carry this twig. And then it fell to the ground. You know, it's like the burden of that twig was just too much. And I'm imagining that if the ant was able to learn, that maybe it picked up a smaller twig or a more suitable twig next time and then came back up. But and the analogy for me in this is that sometimes we carry something that's like that giant twig, and it's a story, and it's something that we believe to be true that burdens us. And as long as we're not seeing it, then we continue to try to carry it, you know, not realizing that we can put it down, we can let it go. And, you know, some of y'all have probably heard of the Zen teacher, David Loy, and he wrote a book called The World is Made of Stories. And I'll give you a couple of quotes from him as I give this talk. But one of the things in his book, the limits of the story of my stories are the limits of my world. And a lot of times we don't see that. And when I work with people one-on-one during meditation retreats, I notice that they usually go into stories when something in the present moment is too uncomfortable to touch and to be with. And so the story becomes very strongly identified, and the intensity of the story, often played over and over again, is in direct proportion to what is the person is trying to avoid in the direct experience of the present moment. And so often I will encourage them, you know, it's okay to use a story to elicit something that somebody wants to communicate, but then there's the point. Can that be brought into the body? Can the story itself be brought into a direct experience in the present moment where there's a chance to then see into it with wisdom and to liberate the mind from the tyranny of a story until then a new story can slowly be built? And so I have an experience of this from when I was growing up and something that happened during COVID. And so I had a really difficult experience growing up, and my father was an alcoholic and my mother died of cancer. They both died My mother died when I was 13. My dad died when I was 16. And it was just a really unstable situation, very difficult and unstable situation. And my grandmother started raising me when I was 13. My father was unfit to be a parent. But there was what I call this painting that followed me everywhere. And it was a painting my parents had had in our dining room. And then when my mother brought it with us when I moved in with my grandmother, and when she died, my grandmother hung this same painting in our dining room in our apartment. And I'm like, what is this painting? And so it was the strangest painting. It was a painting of a burned down house. And I'm thinking, wow, why would anybody want to hang a painting of a burned down house? And I thought, it's such a metaphor for what happened in my family. Everything burned down. It was like, it was almost like a prophecy, you know, with this painting. And I, when my grandmother died, you know, I still had the painting. And the only reason I kept it is because it had a really cool frame around it. And I thought one day, I was, for many years, I was a visual artist, full-time visual artist. And I thought, I'm going to use that frame one day. But I never did. And then during COVID, my husband and I started going through our old stuff. You know, we went through the boxes and, you know, clearing things out. And so I pulled that painting down from the wall and I looked at it. And I really looked at it. And I looked at it in a different way. I looked at it without my past conditioning. I looked at it without all of what I thought I knew about the painting. And suddenly what I saw that I had never seen before, I had never noticed, I'd always seen it, but I had never noticed, was one, there was, of course, there was a brick chimney that had not burned down, that it was still standing. But then amongst the rubble, all the burnt debris around the house, there were all these little wildflowers coming up. And it was like, ah, this is a different story. The initial story was that of just total destruction, everything ending. But then when I looked at it, I saw what still stood. And I saw resilience. I saw what could actually come and be born out of it. And that was the story that I had to create for my own life. And out of just the ashes, something new had to be born. And that is how I lived my life. And then I saw that it was in the painting. And so there it was. I didn't have to be identified with something that was just burned down. And there it was. It was in the painting the whole time. And so how do we free ourselves from stories that maybe don't serve us? How do we find a blank canvas? I think of emptiness as a blank canvas. And many times in our practice, when we meditate, when we begin to move into our bodies and into our immediate experience, there's this letting go of some identification, maybe a story that isn't serving us, and we move into a spacious, that spacious awareness that brings us into the wisdom of the mind and heart. And often there's a resetting. There's a moment where that story, maybe an old story, dies away, and then it opens the space for a new story. And that way we don't have to keep telling ourselves stories that aren't true. And, you know, Tolkien said, history often resembles myth because they are both ultimately of the same stuff. And so what is true? You know, we think about history and how history gets rewritten. And history is often written by the people who have power. And history can get cleaned up and the stories are not always true. You know, and even in simple ways, I remember my husband's mother would tell stories of their childhood that weren't really true to make it seem better and prettier than it really was. But something that happened to me that really woke me up was, as we all have heard stories of slavery and Native American genocide, right? We've heard, we all know the stories and it's terrible. But what happened for me last year is my husband and I we spent about 3 weeks visiting in New Mexico and Colorado, all these Native American sites. We went to Chaco Canyon, probably some of you have heard of that, a huge gathering place for Native Americans, you know, long, long ago. And And so we heard the stories. We heard their stories up close and personal. And then we went to different places. I'm getting emotional. We went to place after place. We heard story after story. We heard the Native Americans talk about it. We saw the beautiful buildings that they had created, the lives that they created. And being in it and feeling it was so different than just a story that I had read about the Native Americans. And so on the last day of this 3 weeks, I sat to meditate one morning. And it's like it just burst, and I just wept for 30 minutes, you know, just letting it, letting my heart just break. Because of the weight of the stories were so immense, the weight of the experience was so immense, that all it could do was let my heart break. And I think sometimes we get so identified with a story in our head that maybe we don't feel it. Maybe we don't let it get down into our bodies. You know, we don't often, and sometimes we can't. Sometimes there's trauma. Sometimes there's too much fear. And yet, I believe this deep love and compassion really opens when we allow these stories, whether they're stories of other people's lives that have suffered, whether it's our own stories of our own suffering. But it's when it moves down into the body and the heart where we can really know it at a much deeper level. And then something can open up, something can be transformed, you know, with our own hearts, with our own experience. And something can change. And so this I want to read also from David Loy. Like the proverbial fish that cannot see the water they swim in, we do not notice the medium we dwell in. Unaware that our stories are stories, we experience them as the world. But we can change the water. When our accounts of the world become different, the world becomes different. And so it's not just about changing stories from negative to positive. Sometimes it's just changing it to something that's direct and real and something we know to be true in our hearts. And so our very identity, the sense of self, is made up of stories. You know, who we are as human beings is a series of narratives which are constantly changing, which can be good, because if we look at the teaching of emptiness, and as Buddha so often taught, there is not a fixed self, a permanent fixed self. We're constantly changing. And so then we have this freedom when we see that. Then we can have this freedom of letting go of an old story, like the ant that dropped the twig. And then we can find something else that's more suitable, that's more fitting, and something that is more pertinent to how we are now. And so I wanted to also offer this quote from Rumi, and it's about how we drop stories and restory. Whoever finds love beneath hurt and grief disappears into emptiness with 1,000 new disguises. And so when we move into the true, authentic experience in our hearts and our bodies, we move into the space of emptiness, and the identity or what we cling to falls away. And then we reemerge, and we call it, the 1,000 new disguises is like this sense of self that we have. We can almost look at it as play. You know, we have 1,000 new disguises, because in a way, since we're constantly changing, we can see it as fluid and always changing. And so we often create new stories to replace the old, and maybe we live in those for a while, and then we see that we've placed them with another and another. And so the mind needs the stories. And as we practice, you know, we can let go. But sometimes we have to let go of what we think we know to be true to find the truth. And then we can see through them. And I think one of the challenges is that the narratives seem like reality, and yet the narratives are only an approximation of the truth. And when we can move into the truth, it's like a blank canvas. Something new can emerge. Something can be born. You know, musicians will say that silence is their canvas. And us meditators, we can really speak to this stillness, this openness and emptiness as our blank canvas where a thousand possibilities are born, endless possibilities, this spacious awareness, this consciousness waking up to itself. And so now I want to tell you another story, and this is one probably a number of you have heard, and I want to kind of bring it into something that maybe, that hopefully is pertinent to what we're looking at here. And this is about Mohini the tiger. So Mohini was a regal white tiger who lived for many years at the Washington, D.C. National Zoo. For most of those years, her home was in an old lion house, a typical 12 by 12 foot cage with iron bars and a cement floor. Mohini spent her days pacing restlessly back and forth in her cramped quarters. Eventually, biologists and staff worked together to create the natural habitat for her. Covering several acres, it had hills, trees, a pond, and a variety of vegetation. With excitement and anticipation, they released Mohini into her new and expansive environment, but it was too late. The tiger immediately sought refuge in a corner of the compound where she lived for the remainder of her life. Mohini paced and paced in that corner until an area 12 by 12 feet was worn bare of grass. And so how do you feel when you hear this? Do you feel compassion for the tiger? But what happens when you see that it may be you or it may be the human condition? Like, what stories might keep us in the cage? And how might emptiness and a new story free us? But first, I want to ask, and I think this is really important, is when you hear the story of the tiger, do you feel, most likely you feel compassion for the tiger? But are you able to offer that same compassion for yourself if you see that maybe you're in the same predicament, at least some of the time? And just for a while, can we be kind? You know, can we offer kindness for whatever it is that keeps us caged or keeps us in our prison? And often that starting point, that compassion, can allow us then to begin to see beyond whatever story that we carry, you know, and then how do we address this with compassion and bring it into our practice in a meaningful way? And so one thing we can do is when the mind is settled, if you have a story that's troubling you, when the mind becomes settled in meditation, you can intentionally activate the story that's troubling you. But we have to see it, of course, to activate it. But many of us know our repeated patterns, right? You can actually activate the story intentionally to access wisdom. And we can begin to use the wisdom, the alchemy of wisdom and presence, the new ingredients that can actually release and change a story. Because whenever we bring awareness and presence into whatever it is that we're holding as a truth in our mind, then we're introducing those ingredients that are inevitably going to change. And then we can remind ourselves of just coming back to the body. We can see the story, we don't have to turn it off, but we can also open to the physical sensations, the emotions, even the thoughts that are getting activated. When we're steady enough, you know, we can actually allow awareness to see this in a way that creates more space, and it can change the story. And so coming back to something I was talking about in my childhood, you know, and I went through, you know, a lot of grief and a lot of pain. And when I came into my adulthood, I wanted to understand what had happened to me. I wanted a story to help make sense of the suffering that I had experienced. And so when I first learned about reincarnation, I thought, oh, okay, that explains it. Somehow this life was unfinished karma. So I was born into this really difficult life so that I could work out the old karma. And so that worked for a while, but then it stopped working. It was kind of more of a story that wasn't really helping me ultimately to make peace. And so I began to let go of the story, and I began to move into a place where I had to access the don't know mind, that I don't know why this particular situation happened to me, but this is how it is. And so as I let go of the story, I was able to access what was in my heart. And what was really in my heart was, first, the need to make peace with what had happened at a deeper level. And it's not that making peace, like finding closure, that's what I'm not really talking about that. But as long as I kept asking the question and looking for a story to answer the question, I couldn't really move into my heart. I couldn't come into contact with the grief that was still there and the unknowns that were still there. But as I let go of my stories and I let go of my knowing around the story, I could access my heart, and I could access the grief and the pain, and I could access that the part of my mind that didn't know but could experience and feel what was present. And that's where the unwinding happened. That's where the freedom happened. And so I was willing to bring into the space what was present and what was underneath the story. And as I did that, something new emerged. And it's kind of like what emerged when I saw the house in the painting with the brick that was still standing and the flowers that were blooming. It was like I could make peace with, in a certain way, I could then, in a certain way, I could make peace with what I had come through. And then I could be reborn, in a sense, into this present moment and into the life that I have now. And all of this took a lot of compassion, and it took a willingness to be present, a willingness to live in what was true, what was underneath the story. And, you know, coming back to what I often experience with people that come in for private meetings or students that I work with, they'll have a story that they want to tell me, and that's where they start, and that's fine, and I'll listen for a while. But at some point, I'll always say, let's come back to this direct experience in the body. You don't have to turn your story off, but let's relate it to what's happening and see what happens. And then as they move away from some of the intensity, and some often it can even be cognitive bypassing, the identification with the story becomes so strong that the immediacy can't be helped. It's like getting bad news, or having, you know how it is when you get a bad news, a difficult situation, for a while you're thinking and you're intensely identified. And there's a lot of mental activity around that, and that's normal. But then at some point, coming into the direct experience and then seeing how the mind is taking that story and carrying it until finally we can wind back, and then experiencing what's true in our hearts and our bodies. And then we have the opportunity of the Dharma wisdom to kind of restory and open something new and something maybe truer and more relevant to how our experience is in this moment, and then moving forward from there. So I think that's what I wanted to share tonight. And I'm happy to, I don't know if y'all ever do Dharma discussions, but happy to hear from you in terms of any reflections or questions or thoughts around this topic. So why don't I just open it up, and happy to hear anything. Yes.
Well, thank you. This was extremely timely. Having a situation with my family, nowhere as nearly as intense as your story. But it is a story with my family. Not important what it is, except I feel left out. And I feel, and this was really helpful. This is really helpful to look at, where does this come from? How does it feel in my body? So it was, for me, it was a very timely and a very, very helpful. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, we have Liz.
Hi, thank you. Nice to meet you, and thank you for being so authentic and present with your feelings and your story. I'm really enjoying you. What is it, do you think, that helped you to let go of your story? I have been experiencing late in life, after practicing for 25 years and being in therapy for most of my life, I have experienced the ability to let go of my story. And it was a miracle. And my mantra is, I'm glad I lived long enough to see it. And it was a result of years and years and years of work. What happened was, I had a very difficult relationship with my mother. And what helped me to let go was to have compassion for her. I thought, how difficult to have a daughter who couldn't stand you. And I had compassion for her. And that was the key in the lock.
Yes.
I could let go of my story. I saw my mother as a person who had needs that were not met. And what is it? And then many, many things started to open for me. I let go of so much and had a wonderful dream where all my suffering part of me let go. And there were something like your painting, where in place of all the suffering in this dream were plants and flowers and mountains. And it was quite an extraordinary experience. What is it, do you think, for you, that helped you to let go of these stories? Because I see where mine helped, where my ability to let go came. And it was truly an enormous gift. And I'm wondering, do you have any idea what helped you to let go of the stories?
Sure. Yeah, thanks. Good question. And also, thank you for sharing that. I'm really, really happy to hear that you've been able to come to this peace with this situation. That's yeah. Thank you. Yeah, there was a lot of things. First, there was so much suffering. I mean, first, I was suffering so much. And when I did go into therapy, and pretty much hand in hand with going into the Dharma and meditation. And I found that the two combined was really the key for me. And, you know, so working in a practical way with the therapist, but also working and bringing it into my practice and really allowing this spacious awareness to hold my heartbreak and hold my pain and hold all of that was unresolved, began to open my heart to parts of those experiences and those stories that felt impenetrable. And one of them was like, much like yours, in the element of forgiveness. My father, who had been an alcoholic, sex abuser, all of those things. I came to a point where, and it was in a deep meditation, where I felt this deep sense of interconnection. And it's like I suddenly know I did not, I felt the intergenerational trauma being passed from his parents to him, to me. And it's just, I felt this line, and it felt like we were all interconnected. We were not separate. And that suffering was just carrying it down. And in my heart, in that moment, I saw my father suffering, my suffering, family suffering, and it just softened my heart, you know, and I suddenly was able to let go. And I forgave, in the sense that of course, when forgiveness doesn't mean that what the abuse was okay, but I forgave in a way that unburdened and freed my heart from that suffering and from the past. And so it was an intentional work in terms of therapy and sitting and just continuing to open my heart to my own pain and to be compassionate to my own pain, until I could also begin to include compassion for my parents and for their parents. So it was just kind of an opening, like a ripple effect of opening the heart. So it was definitely work and intention, and again, that ineffable quality of this spacious awareness that we can, in the Dharma, when we sit and we can find that being held in this spaciousness, I found that I had the space for my grief, I had the space for my pain, I had the space for compassion. And so that's where I feel that the space of Dharma was so powerful to go along with the therapy. So I hope that helps to answer your your question around that.
Well, you did the work, and you were lucky it came through anyhow. You can do all the work and not have that turning. But it was wonderful that there was. And it's a very important combination as far as I'm concerned. Psychotherapy and the Dharma complement each other. Yeah. And congratulations for having the miracle come through of letting go of the story.
Thank you. Welcome. And we have Cherie and Bowman. One of you, someone got a raised hand here.
Yeah, Lisa, thank you so much for agreeing to come and share yourself with this group. This group has just become so important to us. Mm-hmm. And having you here is just, it's hard not to have tears, really. It's so beautiful. And I love, love, love what you said about what's still standing. You know, I lost my son some years ago, and as you know, and you know, getting stuck in that story and the grief and what if and how come and all of that, and being able to separate from that and see that as, well, that's just the story of what happened. What's still here now, right? And the Dharma teaches you how to cultivate what's still there, because it's there innately in all of us, no matter what happens, but we lose sight of it. And, you know, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, because it's really transformational.
You're welcome. Thank you. Yes, Karina.
Hi. Yes, thank you so much. This was also very appropriate timing for me. You know, I've been carrying this story since I turned 65 in October that my body fell apart, and I keep adding to it because every time something else goes wrong, I say, see, ever since I turned 65, this thing happened and this thing, and now I'm on my like fourth thing. And I know how, you know, those stories also create our reality too. Like it'll probably just keep going. So it's, even though it feels like common sense, I don't think I ever really got until you were sharing how I didn't ever go into the feelings of, you know, I had this big party planned and I got COVID on the morning of my 65th birthday. And I never let myself have the feelings. It's like everyone around me had them. So that was one story that came. And then another story is this, it's kind of a family story of the women bend over backwards for you. My mom bent over backwards for me. Therefore, I need to bend over backwards for my daughter, for my patients, for everyone in my life. And this week, I've had two different people ask me to do that. And I don't want to do it. You know, I don't want to live in that story anymore because it ends up hurting me in the end. And so it's just interesting how what I've been going through, I could kind of really apply it to what you so eloquently shared tonight. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you for sharing too. And yeah, thanks for sharing that about the, yeah, it's like having the birthday and then having the stories and then being able to move down into whatever's in the body, you know, whatever's in the heart. It's just really changes things, you know. So thank you for sharing that. Barbara.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for this talk. It was so, it's unique and authentic and very illuminating. I was really intrigued by the story of the twig. You know, the ant taking the twig, because I feel sometimes that what are we letting go of when we let go of a story? And what part of it is this hope that if I tell myself the story enough, not only will I not have to feel it, I also, it'll come out differently. But even if it's a rotten story, I have that great old age story too, you know, body's falling apart, this is happening, that's happening. But I find that sense of hope is one of the problems, that something positive will come out of something that didn't just cause you more suffering. And I wondered if you had any comments on that.
Boy, that's a really good point. And yes, I really think that is a really powerful element of holding on to the story. It is kind of where we create. It's kind of like, and this is so sad, you know, you see people who have a terminal disease and they're given hope, you know, we'll take one more, you know, the doctors already know they're going to die, but they say, well, we'll give you an experimental treatment. We'll give you, you know, it's like that holding on one more. And so there's the hope because it's too hard to sort of just be with like the truth. And, you know, that's an extreme example, obviously, but it is, you know, I think that's a really great point that a lot of the stories that we cling to are like the hope of maybe the ant that thought it could get that long twig up to its place. And, you know, if I just work hard enough and I carry it, or Sisyphus and the boulder, you know, you're like, sometimes you just gotta let it drop down the hill and then you're freed. So yes, I think that's real. And, you know, and to do that, then we're asked, what we have to do, of course, is to face the reality of our circumstances, but not in a negative way, just in an authentic way. Like, this is just the truth of the way things are. You know, in Buddhism, we call suchness, or in Zen, they call it suchness. And then what emerges out of that? You know, what beauty exists? What is still here? You know, what do we really, you know, what do we still have? So that kind of false hope that keeps us out of the present moment, you know, we can let that down. And I find that something new is born that is more authentic, but that isn't based on false hope. So, you know, of course,
there's also that hope is, if I make enough noise with my story and tell enough people, someone will save me. That's what I have sometimes.
Just the right person or something. Yeah,
that's the right way of saying it, or someone will hear me.
And sometimes we need to, and, you know, I found with that sometimes when that happens, if I can start with like offering some compassion to that part of me that is telling that story again and again, if I can start with just being kind and saying, somebody needs to be seen here or heard here, and like turning toward it in a way that can really authentically see and hear what really is needed underneath that story, you know? Yeah. So anybody else, are we okay? So we have, I think, Cherie, you're doing some metta, or you're doing, I think you're doing something right now.
Yeah, I think Marianne has a question first.
Oh, okay, sure.
I absolutely don't know what to say. Everything you said is well, it's just actually a very good thing that I can just raise my hand and say I wanted to say something, but it would take hours. I've been physically sick and in pain for 40 years, and I still had a life. I still wasn't, I was raised by certifiable lunatics. I mean, real crazy people. And I swore I would get out of there. And I was they wouldn't win. They were so miserable. They wanted me to save them and also suffer more. It's been a whole. I'm not gonna. I guess it's like a spit war. And then, but I still had enough. I met some wonderful people on the way. It's like a journey. Up until I was 70, and then the diseases that I had just escalated, well, progressed the way they do with everybody who has it. And I'm I'm in my I don't know, whining, hopeless. Too much pain. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I'm so sorry that you're really in this so much pain right now. And I just want to, for all of us, to offer some metta to you right now. And just that we see
you. Group has been wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you.